Hope that everyone has had a good day and is having a good evening tonight. And I just want to start out saying how much I appreciate each and every one of you. I hope that, you know, one of the things about this congregation, it's always been an encouraging congregation, especially to preachers, and preachers appreciate that. And so I just want to commend you for that. As a matter of fact, many years ago, I read this story one time in a bulletin article, but the story is about a little boy named Walter, and this little boy was considered to be rather dull in school. He was often made to stand in the corner with that high-pointed dunce hat, is the way the story goes. Of course, this dates this. It goes way back when this happened, and it didn't even happen in this country. But when he was about 12 years old, he happened to be where a man by the name of Robert Burns was. And Robert Burns was a great Scottish poet. And he was being entertained there in Walter's home. His parents were entertaining him. And Mr. Burns was admiring a picture under which had been written a couplet, a stanza. And being a poet, that is something that impressed him, or at least it piqued his interest. And so he asked about the author of those lines of a verse underneath that particular painting or that drawing, and no one seemed to know the poem. And Burns was surprised, and of course he was delighted, and when he found out that as this little boy crept to his side, of this man who was a very great man, and he quoted the rest of that poem to Robert Burns. And that's when Robert Burns put his hand on the little boy Walter's head, and he said, and I can't say it with the proper Scottish accent, but basically what he was saying is, son, you are going to be a great man in Scotland someday. Well, that little boy grew up to become known as Sir Walter Scott. And of course, he was a man of greatness. And concerning that, it all started. The main turning point in his life, it appears, according to this story, it goes back to those words of encouragement given by this man. And that's what put this boy on a road to greatness. You know, we all need encouragement from time to time, and we need to hear words like that. It's something that can make our day. It's something that can turn our entire outlook on life around. There are times that we may just feel like, well, this is just ho-hum, and we may even be in a bit of a depression or some doldrums, and it's not that things are bad, it's just that they just are. We don't think of it as being particularly great. But sometimes just words that are just well chosen and said at the right time, even when we don't realize how important they are at that time, they can just make a huge difference in our lives. Solomon understood this, for that matter. In Proverbs 12:25, he said, anxiety in the heart of man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad. And then in 15:4, he said, the wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit. And then Proverbs 16:24, pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones. And then finally, of course, Proverbs 25:11. And this is one that you probably heard before. There was a little book, I remember, people would keep it on the coffee table or an end table at home. But this is where it is said, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. And these are all passages dealing with encouragement. Solomon knew how to encourage. As far as his son was concerned, as he started in the first several chapters of the book of Proverbs, he is addressing his son and he's teaching him. And he's encouraging him at the same time while he's admonishing him and instructing him. But there's always that tone of encouragement in what he said or in what he was saying to him. And so many of these Proverbs either warn or they encourage. And that is something that we all need. This morning, we talked about influence in the church and the importance of it. But right now, we're going to talk about something else. We're going to talk, obviously, about the encouragement that we all need. It's not about others encouraging us. That's not what this lesson is about. Because as Christians, it is good. Like I said, it is wonderful, and we should appreciate the encouragement that we receive. Because there are times that there are things that just get us down. And it may be a type of fear that we don't even consider to be fear. But we need that courage. It may not be that we're just afraid, but we're just hesitant to take a step, to do something that's good, to do something that's positive. And what we need is just a little bit more courage to launch out into this. And that's when we find that being encouraged is going to make that kind of difference. We're going to talk about how we can say something positive, something that's timely, and something that's uplifting to others. We hear words, especially as you go through the New Testament, and you see these words all the time. And we hear so much about it, about words like edify, exhort, encourage, comfort, console, and things of this nature. As the family of God, we need to realize that we are obligated to be encouragers. It's one of the reasons that Barnabas, if you remember Barnabas in the book of Acts, he was called the son of consolation or the encourager. Barnabas was such a great man because of this very fact. That set him apart. It didn't really set him apart from everyone else. What it did is he helped to set a standard. He became so well known in the early church in Jerusalem and then in Antioch and wherever he went as an encourager, that he just lifted people up. And that was a wonderful thing. And that's because he was an example of what all of us as children of God should be. So the question really isn't, should we be encouragers? The real question that we need to ask ourselves this evening is, how can we be better at doing this? In Ephesians 4:29, Paul deals with this. Now, this evening, just for the purpose of this lesson, I'm using this verse, just this verse. We're looking at the ESV. There, that's, of course, another translation. It's a mainstream translation. It's one that I read from time to time. Very few things I found that are amiss in it. I have found one or two, but translations are works of human beings. And so just for the purpose of this lesson, I'm going to approach it from that version because of the way it's worded. And there is nothing mistranslated or wrong with this. So this is where Paul said, let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth. And or rather, he says, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. What Paul is talking about here in this verse, and this is a kind of a nutshell sort of thing when it comes to encouragement, and it's something that can help us so much concerning this. He gives us three secrets to help us to become better encouragers. What are these three secrets? Well, first of all, I thought I had these to come in one at a time, but at any rate, you can see all of them right now. But the first one that we're going to talk about this evening is in the first part of the verse where he said, let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths. That is, let no corrupt communication is the way we normally read this. That is, no corrupt type of communication or talk or language. Any kind of unwholesome types of words is what Paul is talking about here. And so what we find is, if we're going to be encouragers, we must be motivated by love and not by hate, not by filth, or anything of that nature. It was just a few verses before this. If you look at Ephesians 4:15, Remember, Paul talked about how we are to, he said, speaking the truth in love. And so he qualified the way we are, in which we are to present the truth and speak the truth. It must always be done with love. So previously, Paul had dealt with this. Some people, I'm afraid, take great delight in tearing down others. It's almost like a game. It's almost like they enjoy having that kind of power to tear other people down, to go around and pop people's balloons, or to say it plainly, being harshly blunt and condescending to others. And if they can make others feel a little bit worse about themselves for some reason, they take some kind of pleasure in that. That's the kind of thing that we as Christians obviously must avoid. Love will cause us to try to be sensitive about what we say, sensitive toward others, because their feelings are important. Now, this is not to say that we are to avoid the truth. That is absolutely not what we're saying, because we've already mentioned verse 15. We are to speak the truth in love. So it's not the way we are to tell the truth, it's the way it's not telling the truth that we're questioning here. We need to understand the way we are to tell the truth. I had a friend one time who's a preacher get mad at me. We had been out of school for 5 years. And one day he told me, he said, "Steve, you can't do located work. You cannot live in one place and do located work and preach the gospel faithfully any longer." And I said, "That's not true." I said, "Why do you say that?" And he said, "I've been 5 places in 5 years, and I've gotten fired 5 times for preaching the truth." And I told him, I mean, we were very good friends. Courtney and I both were in their wedding, as a matter of fact. And so I felt like I could say it to him. And I called him by name, and I said, "Buddy," I said, You didn't get fired for preaching the truth. You got fired for the way you preached the truth. You see, that's the difference. And that, after 5 times, you think that would dawn on him. And it has. He is a faithful preacher still today. And apparently he is doing a wonderful, wonderful job wherever he is. But that is something that's important. You know, Jesus dealt with this in Matthew 12:34, when he said, "Brood of vipers," he said, "How can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks." And so here Jesus is saying that reveals something about us when we are saying things that are corrupting, things that are destructive. Love is going to help us to overcome this. The right kinds of words are wonderful. But it also gets to the timing. Love is going to consider that. Love is going to be tactful in it. There are situations where someone can come in and they can say something, and they can say it lovingly even, or attempt to say it lovingly, and that can be very truthful. It can be meant to help or for that person's own good. But if they do it at the wrong time, That's a terrible thing. I remember years ago, I knew a fella that he had been in a motorcycle accident. And there was a man who went into him, and he was in the hospital. They were concerned about him losing his leg. And he was in extremely bad shape. And this fella went in, and he started preaching to him right there. And he started telling them why it was a sin for him to have long hair. This dates that too. This was back in the early 70s is when this took place. And this person, as long as I knew him, he never darkened the door of the church building again after that, except maybe for a funeral of a family member or something of that nature. It may be that he was restored later on in life. I hope so. But the fact is that person may have been trying to do something good and positive, but that was not the time to do it when he was laying there fighting for his life and absolutely fighting to keep his leg at that time. It was just not tactful, and it was extremely insensitive. In other words, when we use, even if it's the right words at the wrong time, it's like what Solomon said in Proverbs 25:20, when he said, "It is like one who takes away a garment in cold weather." Those are Solomon's words in this. Shallow words are also things that can be insensitive at times. We say things a lot of times very idly. It's shallow talk. You hear people say, let's do lunch sometime. And they're not serious about that at all. They're not making plans to go eat lunch. They may think, yeah, that'd be a good thing to do one of these days, maybe. But they say, let's go to lunch sometime. I heard about someone who came from another country, a different culture, and that he met some people here in this country, and they said, you know, we're going to have you over for supper sometime soon. And that poor fellow sat by the phone for months thinking that they intended to call him just any time to have him over for a meal. And that was the way he took it, very literally. And some of this may have been the cultural type thing. These folks they did not mean to hurt his feelings or anything of that nature. But the fact is, when we use shallow language, it's not going to encourage anyone. It's not going to help anyone. Flattery is something that might make the person who's doing it feel better about themselves, about himself, but it's not going to help the person who is being flattered. Proverbs 28:21. Again, Solomon had this to say. He said, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue." And sometimes there have been words of encouragement that have even gone as far as to save someone's life. But the second thing that we find here that is a secret to encouragement is found in the middle part of this verse, where Paul said, "But only such as is good for building up, as fits the occasion," the edifying. And so there we have this. Notice this phrase starts with that word "but," and once again it shows a strong contrast in what he had just said with what he's about to say. Don't use this corrupt type of talk, but rather, there's the contrast, but do it this way. The word "build up" or "edify" actually is as much a ministry as anything else that Paul had or that we can have. I think every one of us as Christians, yes, we are called to be servants. We are called to teach. We are called to do a lot of things. And one of the greatest things that any one of us can do, and we should be doing, is striving to edify one another. If we're busy edifying one another, it's going to make it a lot more difficult for us to tear one another down, isn't it? You know, Paul talked about those who do not devour one another when he wrote to the Galatians. And that's something that some people do. It seems like they spend a lot of time just tearing into others, backbiting, that sort of thing, the idle talk. But if we would spend more time trying to think of ways to build up our brothers and sisters in Christ, if we would think of more ways to edify and to encourage one another, it would have to have a huge impact. Paul has given each of us, he's given each of you a ministry. It is the act of one who promotes the growth, another's growth in Christ. In 1 Thessalonians 5:14, Paul said, "Now we exhort you, brethren, warn those who are unruly, comfort the faint-hearted, uphold the weak, be patient with all." Here we find several things that Paul tells us to do, but I want to think about that word "comfort." You know, that word means to encourage in this particular place, in this verse. That's the word for encourage. It means that we are to try to take those who are faint-hearted and fill them once again with that courage to be able to walk through life and to do the things and to have a positive experience in life. It means to speak or to address someone, whether by way of admonition. Sometimes that can encourage, or incentive. It could be done in a way to calm someone down. It can be done to console someone who is hurting, especially emotionally at some point in their life. That is the kind of ministry that we should all strive to have. The point is that sometimes encouragement does require teaching and warning, and it can be done in various ways. So when we get to here looking at this, we need to understand something else. And that is, you'll notice, as we said, this secret is, Paul said, that we must be willing to listen. And you may think, well, that's fine, but what does that have to do with listening? Everything that you've said, everything that we've talked about, when he talked about the edifying, and when he talked about the comfort or the encouraging in this way. He notice he says, as fits the occasion. And when I say listen, what I'm talking about is this. We have to use the appropriate kind of words, whether it is teaching, admonition, consoling, comforting, or even something else. It might be calming someone down. It might be giving them an incentive that they need, using words to do that in some way. But we need to understand the situation, and that means we need to listen. Again, going back to Proverbs 18:13, Solomon said, "He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him." How many times have you heard someone, I've heard of this, where people talk about this or they'll do this as a kind of a joke, but someone will say, "Yeah, how are you doing?" "Well, my best friend passed away, and then my dog got run over, and my wife left me, and the house is being going back to the bank, and then my job, it just fell through, it's gone." And then the other person says, "Oh, that's nice. And then they go on with what they were about to say. Sometimes we don't listen to others while we're doing this. As a matter of fact, researchers have said that we can listen 3 times faster than we can talk. So when someone is talking to us, tell me if this hasn't happened to you, because you don't have to tell me, I know it has. When someone else is talking to you, your brain, you're hearing it 3 times faster, and so you're waiting in between words, in a manner of speaking, and you're thinking about other things, or you can't help it. Thoughts may be popping into your head. And it may have to do with other things. It may be that you were trying to get something done and this feels like an interruption and it's just going too slow because we speak slower than we hear. And we may not listen the way we should. And Solomon had figured this out many centuries before. We have superficial words and we have words that go even deeper. The words that go deeper require listening. It requires timing, and it requires aim. In other words, we can't just know the proper thing to say at the proper time, and sometimes we don't even know then. But if we will think and listen and really try to understand, to be sensitive to the people around us, the people that we're with, then we will be far more likely to have those words that Solomon described in such glowing ways. Words that can turn a person's day around. Words that can even turn a person's life around. Then we have this third part of this, the third secret. We must aim for the heart. Seems like I've talked about the heart a lot recently, but we can't do anything without the heart. That's without the heart, Christianity is empty. It is absolutely worthless. The heart must be engaged. And so here in verse 29, at the very end of the verse, Paul went on to say, that it may give grace to those who hear. So this is something that shows that when we listen, we will be better able to choose words to fit the occasion, as we just said, And these words must be aimed at the fear that that person has, where we can instill that courage or encourage them. And maybe it's the need that they have expressed, and we've realized what they're talking about is they have a need. That need may not be words. It may just be being there and letting them talk. That's something that is extremely powerful, and that too can be encouraging. That's one of the greatest encouragements sometimes, is just to be there to listen. But we can know what those fears are, what those needs are that the other person has. And so to aim for the heart, we have to consider the other person, where they are, how in their life, how they are feeling. And then when we understand that need, then what that's called is considering one another. At least those are the words that we find in Hebrews 10:24. When we talked about attendance on Sunday morning, last week and then the week before that, we talked about the reasoning through that as far as the importance of attendance at every service. Most of you, I think just about everyone here knows this. But then we talked about the heart of the matter, and this really gets into a heart issue in that. And that we talked about Hebrews 10:24 at that time. So many times when it comes to attendance, and incidentally, you have shown by your example tonight that that's where your heart is. Just because you are here tonight, it's a very strong indicator about that. But we so often hear people focus on verse 25, not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together. And that is taken out of context so often. But the fact is, verse 24 really leads into what the author is saying there. When he said, let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works. We need to consider one another. This gets back to the listening. It gets back to understanding what is in that person's heart. And so it shows a purpose of encouragement, to stir up love and good works. We are not to consider how, but to consider one another. That's the main thing. So many times, what can I say? What can I say? What can I do? It's really not so much about the words that you're going to use, but it's about being considerate, being sensitive, and being there for one another. We do this by taking into account the circumstances, the weaknesses of others, so that we can lend them the right kind of support. When we read here in Hebrews 10:24, to stir up, it means to provoke, to spur, to incite. So we, while we're at it, like we say, in this context, it does indicate that we are not to encourage one another just to meet. We're to encourage one another to be faithful, to good works, to all of these things. And when we come together, like tonight, one of the main purposes and reasons that we are here first and foremost, of course, to worship God, but we are here to encourage one another. That's another major factor when it comes to this. And that encouragement is available in the assembly. When one neglects to meet, and like I say, I know this is preaching to the choir, I'm not saying this, I'm just showing how what you are doing really fits in with this idea of encouragement. But when a person neglects to meet, that person is cutting himself off from this encouragement. So, as Paul put it in Ephesians 4:29 at the very end, he said that it may give grace. Grace or charis, that gift. Our words can be a beautiful gift. Our actions that are encouraging can be a beautiful gift to those who hear them. You can give a wonderful gift to those around you if you are motivated by love, as we saw in this passage. If you are willing to listen and to try to understand a person's situation and be sensitive to that situation, and if you will direct your words and your actions to their heart, it will make a difference. There's a psychologist who once said this. His name is Dr. Lawrence Crabb. I have some of his books, but He once wrote this, "Encouragement is not a technique to be mastered. It is a sensitivity to people and a confidence in God that must be nourished and demonstrated." And this is something we can all do. So this evening, I hope that we will strive to be better encouragers. But right now, we're about to sing this invitation song. And this song is sometimes called what? We sometimes refer to it as the song of encouragement, because we're trying to encourage others to take that step to be able to obey the gospel of Christ. And we hope that you'll do that this evening if you haven't already. But as Christians, if there is some fear in your life, if there is some need, and if there is any way we can assist you, won't you come? We encourage you to do that right now as we stand and sing.